This is KTOO's Juneau Afternoon. I'm today's host, Scott Burton, here to give us a COVID-19 update from the city's perspective. Our first guest is CBJ Emergency Operations Center Planning Chief and, when we're not in a pandemic, Library Director Robert Barr. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. It is great to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, thank you for your time. All right, Robert, I was just sort of reflecting on this journey that we've all been on together. Let's go back to the beginning, just to help give us some perspective. When was the first case of COVID reported in Juneau?
Well, that's an interesting question. So the first case of COVID was reported on March 21st, but it was backdated. The onset date of symptoms was determined to be March 10th. So that's interesting, right? And I think it's telling that that was our first case because it provides a good sort of anecdotal example of why testing is so important. I think Dr. Zink likes to refer to like the flashlight. The testing is the flashlight that helps us understand the disease. And,
All right. So let's see. March, April, May, June, July, August, September. Let's call it about 6 months. Fast forward, Robert, where are we now?
Man, it's crazy to think that it has been 6 months. It feels like it's been so much more than that and so much less depending on the day. So right now, we are in, I guess it's unfortunate that I have to report that we are seeing our highest counts of community spread based cases to date right now. So, you know, if you go strictly by active case counts, we have been a lot higher than we are right now. But where we're at right now, I would say, is more concerning than we have been in the past 6 months or at any point in the past 6 months because of the types of cases that we're seeing and how they're categorized. So, yeah.
Yeah. Can you help us unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, most folks listening will remember that we had a high number of cases associated with the seafood industry a while back, and then we had another high number associated with the mining industry. We had a high number early on, many months ago now, with Lemon Creek Correctional Center. And, the indications around, or the things that's important to remember about those particular cases, is that we had a high degree of confidence that our case activity then would be contained to those populations. Because we had great partners with in the seafood case, with Alaska Glacier Seafood and with Lemon Creek, with the state of Alaska, and our mining industry here locally, to really ensure that all of those people were being well cared for, isolated, their close contacts were being monitored, not only by us and the Department of Health and Social Services, but also by industry or business or whatever the case may be. And it was telling that, you know, we didn't see a great deal, and in some cases, not any spread into the community from those particular clusters or what we are referring to them now. That's not true with community spread cases. So, you know, every Monday we have a conversation with public health, and we look back over our last 14-day period. And all the cases that came back over those 14 days, we categorize into one of four categories. And those categories are travel. So a travel-based case just means that case originated from outside of town and came into Juneau. A secondary case means that we were able to identify with a high degree of confidence where that person got infected from, who they became infected. And then under investigation, and that's just, it means we're still investigating, we don't yet know. And then community spread, and those are the ones that I'm referring to here. And community spread-based cases are ones where we aren't able to identify where that case came from. That's an indication that there are more cases out there that we don't know about. It's an indication that we're not doing enough testing. And it's an indication that we are likely to see more cases as a result down the pike.
Sounds like
18 of those. Yeah,
the scariest community spread is sort of the scariest.
Yeah, that's fair. It is. It's the number that we look at And it makes us concerned because we don't have as much knowledge around around our overall community situation when we see that number climb. And I mean, it's trite, but knowledge is power, and that helps us take reasonable actions and implement reasonable mitigation strategies to keep this whole thing under control.
Got it. You may have already alluded to this, but once more, just give us an overview of where we are right now with numbers.
Yeah, sure. So we haven't updated our numbers yet today, but yesterday we were at 35 active cases. We reported 2 new cases today. We will be reporting, I believe, 6. There may be 1 or 2 more, but 6 new cases today. There will be a couple more recovered today, too. So our active number will probably jump to around 40. On Monday, we reported that over the past 14-day period, we were seeing 18 community spread-based cases, which is more than twice what we've seen, or which is exactly twice what we've seen in prior 14-day periods. Cumulatively, we've seen a total of around 355, again, it's slightly more than that now, but about 355 cases in Juneau. That includes both residents and non-residents in the past 6 months now. And interestingly, we don't have any active non-resident cases anymore. It's all resident, which you would expect, right? Because we're out of the tourism season.
Right. Have you had a chance to communicate with your counterparts in other small cities? For, you know, thinking of another city with a comparable population, maybe 30,000 or so. What do those cities' numbers look like? Not to put you on the spot, it's a big question, I know, but any of that kind of cross communication?
You know, I get a chance to, every now and then, I do get a chance to communicate with my counterparts and with other EOCs and other municipalities. The Alaska Municipal League is great about facilitating a weekly call with all municipalities in Alaska and DHSS public health staff. It's called an ECHO. And, you know, on those calls, we hear every week from a different community and how they're implementing their own community mitigation strategies and what risk metrics they're tracking, what indicators they're paying attention to, what they're concerned about. And, you know, those are interesting calls. I guess what I would say about them is Alaska is diverse and communities are really looking at this from a lot of different angles. And some of it is stuff you would expect, right? So, in small communities, they're a lot more quick to take action to control things because they have a lot fewer medical resources, as an example. Whereas in larger communities, that tends not to be the case. And I guess if I had to pick one, I'd point to Ketchikan. You know, when we were developing our risk mitigation metrics, our risk metrics for our mitigation strategies, and looking at all of our indicators. We didn't reinvent those. We didn't develop those fresh and anew ourselves. We paid a lot of attention to what the state was recommending, as well as to what Ketchikan had already done. They were really ahead of the curve on developing risk metrics and indicators. So had a chance to chat with their incident commander and look at what they had been doing and what their assembly had been deciding to help inform our own indicators. So yeah, I appreciated that.
Okay. So here we are with close to 40 active cases. Is that right?
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay, going into the weekend here in Juneau, what's on your mind and what should be on all of our minds as listeners and community members?
Yeah, that's I appreciate that question. Thank you. So I would say that, you know, what I think about individually, personally, for my family, and what I hope the community is thinking about is just, you know, where the risk is, right? So if you know where the risk is, then you can take reasonable actions to limit and in some cases even eliminate your risk. And we are seeing community spread-based cases right now, which indicates that there are people out there, and we should all think of ourselves as these people who may be infectious, but not ill. right? And it's important to differentiate between those two things. So I could be infectious right now, and I'm not ill, so I don't know. I wouldn't know that I'm infectious. And if that's the case, then if I was in close contact with you, Scott, or with someone, with a family member of mine, or someone who was new to my social bubble, or anyone really who wasn't infected yet, I could fairly easily pass on COVID to them. And there are ways, you know, there are ways that we know now to prevent that infection. And there's really, really a couple of key things. And we know now that masks are really quite effective at preventing infection. The science is really backing that up. We are hearing from the Department of Health and Social Services staff, Dr. Zink and her team, and from the CDC, that masking genuinely helps prevent infection. In addition to that, we know that we know now that masking is not only protective in not passing along COVID to other folks, but it also is somewhat protective for us personally if we are not yet infected by COVID and we are exposed to someone who is. And we think that that's a factor. We think why that's the case. We don't know this for sure yet, but we think why that's the case is because if you are infected or if you are exposed to someone with COVID, the initial sort of viral load that you are exposed to matters. And if you receive a whole lot of COVID all at once, you're likely to have a more serious case than if you just get a few amount of viral particles. You can think about it that way. And your mask helps reduce that initial viral load. So I would really emphasize masking. And then another area of risk that I think it's important for people to think about is really just quite simply when you're indoors, in indoor spaces, with people who are not part of your family or social bubble. And when you are around those people in close contact, right? So closer than 6 feet for more than 15 minutes in a cumulative fashion. Those are kind of the big risk areas. And if you're wearing a mask, it really reduces your risk. And if you can maintain more than 6 feet, you can reduce the amount of time that you're exposed to people, that also really reduces that risk.
Okay. Where are we as thinking about restaurants, bars, and other, you know, possible socializing spots in the city right now?
Yeah, so we plan to maintain our current mitigation strategy stance, which is we're at level three with a sort of partial implementation. So bars are closed, restaurants at reduced capacity. Through the weekend for sure, and we will be revisiting that next week as we learn more about our kind of overall disease situation as the days go by and learn about what we see over the weekend. We encourage outdoor operations to the extent that those are possible right now, and a number of bars and restaurants have shifted into some outdoor operations. I can see one out my window right now downtown, and that's great. We know that risk is sharply reduced outside. So at least through the weekend, we'll be maintaining that stance.
And can you give us a quick context on level three? What would level four look like? Or which, how's that look?
Yeah, of course. So right now we're at level three, but we've only partially implemented the level three mitigation strategy. So we've only implemented the strategy that's associated with bars and restaurants. We haven't implemented the other ones. And there are others around travel and around large gatherings, and the face masks one doesn't cover, but there's a few more in level three. And I hope we don't really have to implement those. Internally at the city facilities, if we fully implemented level three, that would mean closing the libraries and recreation facilities, as an example. We hope we don't have to do that. And indeed, we hope that maybe even as soon as next week, if things go well, and if we learned that of our active cases right now, there's not a lot of close contacts, and we don't get a lot of new cases over the coming days and week, that we can reduce back down to level two. There are a total of four levels. Level four, you can think of as kind of like the extreme hunker down level. If we got to level four, that would be our recommendation to the assembly, that we go back into hunker down.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with CBJ Emergency Operations Center Planning Chief Robert Barr, getting a comprehensive COVID-19 update from the city. What else is on your radar right now, Robert?
Well, we are paying a lot of attention to testing right now. That's an area that I spend a lot of my time focused on. So folks might be aware that there's a variety of different types of COVID tests available. There's rapid tests, and there's lab-based tests, there's PCR tests, and there's antigen tests, and there's antibody tests, and there's tests that can be done just in your doctor's office. There's tests that you can do at home. There's tests that can only be done at the hospital. There's all kinds of tests, right? So I think, you know, one type of test that's been getting a lot of press lately, if you've been following the COVID news, is antigen tests. And antigen tests, basically how those work, is they try to detect a specific type of protein that is on the surface of SARS-CoV-2 infected cells. And the reason why those have been getting a lot of press is because they are much easier to produce than the type of PCR tests, which is the type that we've been doing predominantly to date. So you can make a lot more of them, and they're a lot cheaper. They're between 1-5% of the cost of a PCR test. So they're much easier for budgets to absorb. They haven't been, I should frame this carefully. So there have been a couple of antigen tests approved for use by the FDA right now, but there haven't been any antigen tests approved for use that can be done without an analyzer or at home, by someone who's not medically trained. Those types of tests do exist, and there's quite a bit of advocacy out there in the scientific community to get those approved, so that we can start doing a lot more antigen testing. I think, you know, the risk with antigen testing is they're less sensitive than PCR tests. So if you think about when you get infected with COVID, a PCR test will be able to detect that infection much sooner than an antigen test will. So that's really why they haven't gotten that emergency use approval yet. But there is a lot of value, we think, potentially, in being able to do those tests, and to do a lot more of them, and to do them a lot more efficiently from an economic perspective.
How about this, Robert? If you wanted to get tested today, how would you do it?
So if I wanted to get tested today, I would, first of all, I would have to have a reason to get tested today. So I would either need to be going to get a medical procedure done, or I would need to be exhibiting some sort of symptom that's associated with COVID. And so if that was the case, I would call the COVID screening hotline, which is 586-6000, and I would tell them, like, yep, here's my referral from my doctor that's doing this procedure for me, or I'm symptomatic, here's my symptom. And then they would schedule me for a test out at the fire training center. I would go get that test. I would drive through, probably, I have a car, and I was able to. And if not, they would come to me, and I would they would swab my nose. And they use the more comfortable swab than they used to right now. So if you had a COVID test a long time ago and it was the brain tickler, we're not doing that any. Well, we're doing some of those for free medical procedures. So I shouldn't say we're not doing them at all, but predominantly we're doing the more comfortable nasal swab now. And then that test would get flown up next day to Fairbanks, and it would get processed in the state lab. And I would hopefully have those results within 2 to 4 days, is basically what we're seeing right now.
All right. So could through that process, could you have actually gotten tested today, or would that maybe have happened tomorrow and maybe results on Tuesday or so?
You know, if I was symptomatic and it was 3:30 in the afternoon, it would depend on if they had any more time slots available in the afternoon. And they might, we haven't been filling up every day, so it's possible, it's more likely that I would get scheduled.
And going back to something you said earlier in this conversation is that, you know, if I were symptomatic, so if I'm just worried about having COVID, I probably shouldn't get a test. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, that's still our default position. So we do, from time to time, do asymptomatic testing. So, you know, most people know that we did a lot of asymptomatic tests over the last weekend at Centennial Hall for people that were that had socialized in bars over a specific time period. But generally, the test supply, we have been doing a lot of tests. Alaska, for a time, was number one in the nation for the amount of tests per capita that we were doing. We continue to do a lot of tests, but the test supply and the laboratory capacity is not such that we can just broadly asymptomatically test everyone just yet. I think it will get there. I think antigen tests will likely get there immediately if they ever get an FDA approval for use.
All right. And correct me if I'm wrong. If you have questions, if you're in doubt, you just call 586-6000 and they can talk you through it.
Yeah, if you have questions about whether or not you qualify for a test, absolutely. If you have general COVID-related questions, you can email us at covidquestions@juno.org, and we'll get back to you. We try to get back within a couple of days. Usually it's less than that. And we often draw from those questions when we do our community updates, which we've been doing. I should know this off the top of my head. I think we shifted to Wednesdays, or is it Tuesdays? Let me look.
All right, and that
doing them on Tuesdays.
Tuesdays. What time do those come out again?
4 o'clock.
4 p.m. And those are on the city's YouTube channel, or remind me where we can find those?
Yeah, so we do those via Zoom. We post the link on our website, and we put out press releases too with the links, and we also stream them live on Facebook.
All right, that's Tuesdays at 4. You can also go to Juno.org for more information. If you have questions, covidquestions@juno.org. Robert Barr, I really appreciate your time speaking with us today. Is there anything else that we should cover before we end this update?
You know, I just really appreciate the time, Scott. I think the last thing I'll mention really quick is that we are working still on getting the ability to process PCR-based tests locally. So I mentioned that if I was going to get a test today, that test would have to be flown out of town. We still are in the queue, basically, with a number of different vendors for the right laboratory equipment to be able to analyze those locally, so that test wouldn't have to get flown out of town, which would significantly decrease the turnaround time before I got my results.
All right. And how about this? To take us out, what is your message to our listeners for how we should behave this weekend?
Wear your mask. Stay, if you can all manage it, play outdoors. Outdoors are the safest place to be right now. And when you have to go indoors with people who are outside of your family or social bubble, wear your mask and keep it brief.
Robert Barr, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Scott.